This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. It is a new year. We are a week into 2020, a new decade, and
well,
God,
depending on how you count.
It feels like it's been a very long year already. We're just a week in. Hello and happy new year to you, Susan.
Happy new year to you. I cannot say that 2020 is looking to be a great year all around so far, but you know, it's got time to improve.
Okay, that's one way to look at it. I like that. I like that. Because I feel a little bit better. I can't believe I'm going to say this after this morning's address by President Trump. And we're just going to start there. Our listeners know a lot's been going on in the last week. But let's start off with the most kind of recent, like where we are right now on what's going on between America and Iran. And so that takes us to Trump's address. He was going to make a statement last night. I thought he was going to get on TV and say, "I declare war," like he's playing the card game, but he didn't. They prevented him from doing that. So let's listen to just a little bit, just the opening remarks from Trump's address.
As long as I'm president of the United States, Iran will never be allowed to have a nuclear weapon. Good morning. I'm pleased to inform you the American people should be extremely grateful and happy. No Americans were harmed in last night's attack by the Iranian regime. We suffered no casualties. All of our soldiers are safe, and only minimal damage was sustained at our military bases. Our great American forces are prepared for anything. Iran appears to be standing down, which is a good thing for all parties concerned and a very good thing for the world.
So let's talk a little bit about this. It's a very short, five, six, 7 minute speech, right? He called on the signatories of the Iran deal that Obama had entered in 2015 to break away from it. Trump himself withdrew in 2018. It's been something he's been trying to undo. You know, I mean, he ran on it. He said that he's going to call on NATO to become more involved in the Middle Eastern process, peace process. Do you think that, what was he talking about there? Israel-Palestine? What do you mean there?
I suspect his only real, or his most concrete interest there is in having other states abandoned the JCPOA.
Okay.
Beyond that, it's an empty, contentless statement.
Okay.
I mean, why would NATO? Wait, well, yeah. What he says there is like he's trying to call in a favor, but not saying what the favor is. I think he probably means JCPOA.
Okay. I don't think he means in the fight against ICE. I mean, because I think he's basically said, you know, Russia, you got this, Bashar Assad, you got this. Like, he's kind of turned over that entire battle to those two players. He talked a lot about the big weapons, the many, many weapons we have, the many different kinds of weapons, how many trillions he's spent on, quote, rebuilding the military. And he does talk about the destruction of ISIS, how many tens of thousands of ISIS, I don't think that's an accurate figure, but how many tens of thousands of ISIS soldiers have been killed during his administration, and killing al-Baghdadi. And then he says, he talks about the strike that he ordered killing Soleimani this past week. He said, last week we took action to stop a ruthless terrorist from threatening American lives. And he said, we eliminated the world's top terrorist. I thought that was a really interesting. I mean, what do you think of that framing of Soleimani? And that gets us into who was Soleimani, but what do you think of that?
I think there was probably a fair bit of thought behind those statements made by people in the administration who care about such things, but I think ultimately it's meaningless. Whatever message they're trying to convey with this, I think that their legal posturing, none of it matters because, like, it's a practical matter whether or not this was a legal strike. There is no real remedy for what happened. There's no repercussions in the legal sense. Now, in the sense of, like, war and international relations, sure, but as a legal matter, I don't think it's really a question that needs to be addressed or will be addressed, should be addressed, but will not be.
You don't think it's a legal matter, it's a question to be addressed whether or not Soleimani, who is you know, a general, like almost a head of state of Iran can be designated, maybe not officially, but unofficially, a terrorist and then assassinated like this? I feel like that's kind of a big question.
It absolutely should be, but it won't be. There's no mechanism for that. So we should go back a bit for, in terms of legality, why this happened does matter, mm-hmm. assuming legality matters at all, which I'm skeptical of at this point.
Yeah.
If you're going to go to the origins of this, it definitely goes to Trump's nixing of the JCPOA. That is the current crisis that Trump caused and is now trying to solve. And his trademark move is to make a mess, then kind of clean it up or not make it a bigger disaster and claim victory. So rising tensions because of that. And then we had, I would say more recent escalations, but it's been escalating pretty steadily through December when there was an attack on the American embassy in Baghdad.
There's a context for that too, right? That happened because there was a previous strike. I mean, like, it's one thing after another, right? An American contractor that was killed, then America retaliated for that, then there were the embassy protests. Like, that's where we got, basically in the month of December.
That's what escalated current tensions to the point where Trump made the decision to assassinate, kill, murder, attack the head of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard in Iran. And he did that in a drone strike inside of Iraq and killed Soleimani.
Right. Now, the Department of Defense...
Kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it's a huge deal. I mean, Department of Defense... I'm like, this is such a big deal that this is apparently an option that was presented. I mean, it's kind of thing that was floated for years because Soleimani has had, like, you know, for decades now, a very large role in all kinds of, you know, operations in the region, outside of the region. According to intelligence sources, he was involved in attempted assassinations of ambassadors and heads of state and all kinds of like different operations around the world. He's trained militias. He absolutely, you know, is a ruthless war criminal, I would argue. Having said that, he still is a government official. Now, the Department of Defense, after the strike, said that Soleimani was, quote, actively developing plans to attack American diplomats and service members in Iraq and throughout the region. And that's what Pompeo over and over has been saying, initially was saying, that there was an imminent threat, we had to take him out. That doesn't seem to be true because apparently there's been reporting now that for the last few months, Pompeo has been approaching Trump about getting Soleimani. That's something that he's really been focused on. And it's only because Department of Defense Secretary Esper is in place and not Mattis that he was actually able to make this happen now. And that doesn't suggest an imminent threat necessarily.
Yeah, this is definitely a situation where if they considered it before, they could have gotten Soleimani earlier times. It's not a case of like they could strike now or never. They've had opportunities before. They'd have them again. There was no sign of a traditionally legal definition of imminence being met here. There was no like sudden planned attack within the next day or two that could only be averted by striking another government official. The imminence argument, they're making it. They're trying to position themselves as being on the right side of the law. You heard that in the speech this morning from Trump. But no, it's not met. It's absolutely not appropriate to apply in this context. On the other hand, again, there's no consequences for doing it, for legal consequences for doing it.
I mean, I guess the big question is, what I have read, and I thought this was really interesting, is that when in one of these positions, like, you know, intelligence agencies, DOD officials, they will give a president a slate of options, right? These are the options. And sometimes they'll put some extreme options on the table so that they can steer the president to a more, like, the option they want him to pick. And this time, and killing Soleimani was one of
them. Which happens in all administrations.
Sure.
That's not unique to Trump.
Exactly. Like with any president. And so, killing Soleimani has been on the table before, apparently in front of other presidents. And everybody said that will just inflame the region. That's going to cause an all-out war. It's just too extreme an option. And so it's never been taken. But in the last few months, it seems like it's been Esper, Pompeo, and even Pence to an extent that convinced Trump that this was the way to go. But I guess my question is this. Let's say there was no imminent threat. right? There's been some escalation, but I don't think there was evidence that Soleimani is directly involved. Like, for example, the protests at the embassy. Nobody was killed in those protests. I mean, no Americans were killed in the protests in the embassy. Like, why? I mean, they had to, Trump has to, I mean, Trump ran on an anti-war isolationist platform. He's always talking about, you know, there's a million tweets where he was like, oh, you know, Obama's going to attack Iran just so he can get elected again. I mean, like, he has always, well, am I wrong to think that he had an aversion to getting into another protracted war? Or does he just think he could just do this and get out and there would be no longer consequences? Like, why did they decide to do this? I don't understand the strategy behind it.
I think the only saving grace of the Trump presidency is that Trump is inherently conflict avoidant. He hates conflict, despite right. all his rhetoric, despite all of his posturing over the years. He avoids conflict at every opportunity. He can't even fire people in person. He has to ask people to fire people for him because he can't stand to do it himself. So that instinct,
or by tweet.
Which is, I think is just a person, yeah, or by tweet,
yeah,
which I think is more a personality attribute. It's not a policy position. It's just a personal.
Sure, but it has an impact. It has an impact.
Guiding star.
Yeah, yeah.
And it does. And luckily for us, it means that his he will tend to back away as opposed to escalate things at a certain point. Now, that alone is not going to save us, especially people like Pompeo, who are apparently have been for years now engaged in a campaign to convince Trump to escalate the violence in Iran. So Robbie and I, independently, all on our own, each got some Rothy's shoes.
Yep, for the first time.
Yes, and I was really excited about it. And then I picked out an amazing pair of shoes, and I'm like, look at these kick-ass shoes I got. And it turns out Robbie and I got basically the exact same shoes.
The exact same shoes. And Rothy's come in a million different, like, array of colors and prints and patterns and styles. And Susan and I picked, like, the exact same ones. So, you know, great minds.
Big Python. It's the bomb.
Yep. I love them. And they're, like, this amazing purple-ish, like, you know, snake pattern. I love them. So, my first time getting Rothy's, your first time getting Rothy's, and we get it. I finally get it, why everybody loves
them.
Yep. So one of the very amazing things about Rothy's is that you can wash them in the machine. Now, I haven't worn mine enough yet to get to that point, but I can't wait to try it.
They are also the comfiest shoes I've ever had that were work appropriate, by far. I mean, they're amazing looking too, but they're so comfy.
Flat shoes are usually not comfortable. They hurt your arches, but these are insanely comfy, and I don't know how they do it because they made them out of recycled plastic water bottles. Like, how? How is this even possible?
Magic.
It's magic. Well, whatever they do it in their own manufacturing workshop. They prioritize sustainability every step of the way, and they ship directly in their shoebox, so there's no unnecessary packaging. So they look great, they feel good, and they feel good in more than one way.
And if you're like me and you're nervous about buying shoes online because you feel like no shoes ever fit you, they have a fantastic sizing guide. So even if you have weird-shaped feet like me, you can be sure the shoes you get are going to be great. Mine were.
Mine were, too. So go to Rothy's.com/45th and get your new favorite flats. Check out all the amazing styles available right now. Rothy's.com/45th. Comfort, style, and sustainability. These are the shoes you've been waiting for. I'm going to have a whole, like, row cleared out to buy more for the rest of this year. Head to Rothy's.com/45th today.
Now, the reporting could be conflicting or considered to be conflicting on why and how Trump made this decision. There was one article came out about this whole, Trump was given many options. This assassinate Soleimani option was there to, like, make the other options seem more reasonable. And then another story came out that's like, oh yeah, Pompeo wanted this all along. Pompeo made it happen.
Right.
This is all Pompeo's doing. But I don't think they're necessarily in conflict if we assume that it's the DOD who did not want to see this sort of unstrategic escalation. And yet, under influence from Pompeo, they were forced to make an available option. And ultimately, Trump was convinced that this was the manly, powerful move. And he chose it. We know after the strike or on the days before, he was telling aides that he was arguing that his attack on Soleimani would be politically popular and that Iran would, quote, not do anything too stupid in response. So I think his belief was that despite the extreme nature of this attack, and it was a very extreme operation, this is not something standard in foreign policy or in war, I think he thought it would be a one and done kind of deal.
And it would boost his popularity. He would be, like, this would be like his Osama bin Laden moment, which is what he thought with Baghdadi. You think that kind of thing?
I think he thought that. I think that was totally delusional because it's a very different scenario.
He's losing.
That was just never going to happen.
I mean, he lost Geraldo, Tucker Carlson, even Spencer over this. You know, so, yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem, you know, it certainly hasn't been popular. And the odd thing is hearing people like Pompeo and others who are supporting this saying, oh, yeah, this is going to be, like, you know, appreciated in Iran. And I mean, the oh my God, the turnout in the streets of Iran, it was insane. I mean, I think millions and millions of people turned out in mourning and protest after Soleimani was killed. I mean, he was a beloved figure in Iran. He's like a, they called him a living martyr. You know, he's, through 30, 40 years, he's been like a hero in that country. It was a very big deal. And, you know, we also, by the way, I mean, like, the strike also, it didn't just kill him. It also killed the deputy head of the Iran Popular Mobilization Forces, Abu Mehdi al-Muhandis. And the thing about these two figures is they were both kind of instrumental in the fight against ISIS. And that's the calculation I don't understand is, you know, even in the speech this morning, Trump is talking about how they got, you know, he's been so successful in destroying ISIS. These two men also were very instrumental in that fight against ISIS.
Yeah. In terms of, I think there is I hesitate to say this, but a real logic behind their rationale for why they could do this and it would be okay in attacking Soleimani. I think that there is, I think more likely than not, this strike, it would, in a typical world, would not lead to war with Iran. But the flip side of that is, like, what do you gain from it? There's no real benefit in Iranian-American relations or foreign policy or war positioning from doing this. It makes Trump look big.
Or national
big,
security.
Dramatic, splashy strike.
It does not increase our national security.
Right. Even if I think the odds hopefully are, against this causing escalation into outright warfare between Iran and America, again, what is the national security benefit? Aside, there's some in having him dead. I guess arguably there is some small advantage there. But this is not like a world where you are. We don't want to be in a world where we're like, oh, hey, so and so would be slightly more advantageous to American foreign policy to have removed from this plane. So let's go strike him with a drone and call it a day. No, you need more than like a marginal benefit from their lack of resistance to justify this kind of strike. So again, the Iranian scenario has not been changed by this that much. But the other side is the Iraqi situation.
Sure.
And now we are facing expulsion. The U.S. government and U.S. military is facing expulsion from Iraq, although there's some incoherence there as well.
Yeah, the parliament in Iraq voted, I think, the day after, like very quickly after the strike, to basically expel U.S. troops. And then there was a very odd thing that happened. The DOD apparently sent a letter to Iraqi authorities, which was circulated in the media. I don't know if it was leaked or whatever. Very short statement saying we're preparing to withdraw our troops, all of our American troops, from Iraq. And then hours later, you have a briefing in which I don't know who it was at DOD, but said that was a mistake. That was a draft. It was not signed. It should not have been
released.
I mean, it's a draft that they sent to Iraq. And my guess is because Trump before that had already, you know, so Iraq votes, you know, to get rid of U.S. troops. Trump gives a statement in which he's like, oh, if they try to get rid of our troops, we're going to sanction, you know, them to hell. And, you know, there's no way they have to pay us back for all the money we put in the bases and this and that. Basically, he's like, we're not going to withdraw troops. Then the DOD issues this letter by mistake, apparently, and then backtracks. And I'm guessing the backtracking was because Trump had a fit. And now I don't know. Now they're saying we're not withdrawing, but we're repositioning troops. So,
and perhaps more disturbing is there was a notification from DOD to Congress saying that this idea of a draft letter was, quote, active disinformation.
Oh, what? I missed that. Wait, explain that.
Yeah, no, they just sent, when this was first being reported before, I think it was like confirmed to be an actual letter that was sent to Iraq.
So they were saying this is fake news, that we didn't even send it. That's what they were saying initially.
Yeah, the military version of fake news is active disinformation, and that's what they called it. And then it turns out it was real. But like, it's just a big old clusterfuck. I think, I'm not going to call it, you know, innocent, but I don't think it necessarily had malevolence behind it, or all of it. It was just...
No, this is
a big old clusterfuck.
This is incompetence. This is some incredible incompetence. But speaking of Congress, part of the issue here is that Congress was never notified about the strike. They were not notified before it.
Lindsey Graham was notified over a golf game.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't briefed after it. People at Mar-a-Lago apparently knew because that's where Trump was when this was happening. But nobody was ever notified. And then I think over the weekend is when Trump also, a number of things happened, right? Okay, so Parliament votes to kick the troops out. The UN, the Iran, Iranian foreign minister is trying to enter the United States to attend a United Nations meeting and address the UN. Trump basically bars him. They don't let him to come in, which is like, again, against the law. The Customs and Border Patrol was told to detain not just Iranian nationals at the border, but also Americans of Iranian descent. There have been numerous reports of dozens of people like stopped and detained like that. And then Trump tweets out that he's like, you know, if Iran escalates, well, we've got 52 sites and, you know, Iranian sites that we're going to take out, including cultural sites that are important to them.
which is a war crime. Which is a war crime. To be very clear.
Yeah, which is a war crime.
And of course, we had Esper respond the next day saying like, oh, I will not obey an illegal order. Like, we will not carry out illegal operations. Never specifying Trump or like, you know, noting that the commander in chief has said that he will commit war crimes. But he took the quote unquote adult position of saying, no, we're not going to do that. And then
Trump
backed down.
Pompeo took the insane position of saying, Trump never said that. He said, read the tweet carefully. That's not what he said. That's exactly what he said. I mean, it's like Orwellian. Okay, so all this happens. Then Nancy Pelosi announces that the House would vote this week on a war powers resolution to limit Trump if he wanted to escalate into a full war, basically try to limit or deny like funding for such an action. And I don't know. I mean, apparently then Iran, you know, we had last night Iran retaliated basically. And they retaliated in a manner that I think most analysts are saying was a face-saving manner. That they did in a calculated way to make sure that there was like as little loss of life. And there was, I think, zero loss of life, as far as I know, as possible. But a U.S. airbase in Iraq, three missiles hit it, I believe, last night from Iran.
Like 30.
Oh,
it was more than three. It was, oh, I love three may have hit, but they fired
many more.
30 was the estimate. It was like, okay, not going to lie, like it was a little bit nerve-wracking when the news came out last night.
Yeah, it was.
I was not too worried, although the thing, like, it did not seem like Iran wanted to open up a full-on actual war.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, it with the clarity of today, it seems like what they were doing was kind of a very elaborate, risky military salute send-off as they buried Soleimani, because his funeral was, like, time for this, you know, barrage of strikes. Mm. And the strikes themselves seem to have been kind of remarkably precision placed,
yeah.
beyond what I think we expected Iranian technology to have, to be able to actually not just hit a base, but hit the part of the base that will not cause damages or casualties and avoid further escalation. That's, you know, kind of alarming in itself that they could be that precise. But at the same time, no matter how good your tech is, like, this is not something you can be fully confident of. Even if you think that you have the tech to do this, there's always a risk. And I think even though Iran did not want to open up further escalations, I think we got lucky. Imagine if last night something had gone slightly wrong. Either the Americans hadn't prepared enough or the Iranian guidance system was a little bit imprecise and five Americans died.
Right.
What world would live in this morning? R1.
I mean, I do think, they got remarkably lucky that they didn't hit anybody. But I will say that last night as this was unfolding, I didn't think it would matter. I thought that this was going to be a signal to this administration that we are ready. Like, we are attacking a U.S. military base. That's an act of war, that we are ready to go to war. And I thought Trump is going to get up and be like, he's going to start attacking civilian sites in Iran. That's what I really thought. And it seems like from his speech this morning that we're a bit of a, you know, stalemate here. Tit for tat, we're done. But it's interesting. There's an analyst on Twitter that I follow, and he's of Persian descent, Yashar Ali. And he says, look, this is not how Iran operates. Iran operates slowly. He's like, you know, their retaliation will be protracted. It'll be over the course of months and years. It'll be in different ways. It'll be through targeted assassinations and other terror. Like, it'll be, it's not going to go away necessarily. But it could be that by that time, we don't have Trump on this end. Speaking of which, by the way, I just saw a tweet, which I thought was crazy this morning by some Democratic congressman said, and I don't know who, but he said to a reporter, he said that, you know, we would have been looking kind of at a full-scale war if we had two countries that, you know, had unstable leaders, but luckily Iran does not. And it was like, wow. I mean, so, yeah. So if things do escalate with Iran, you know, if Trump is not around, then it might be handled better. I think the scary thing is having something like this happen under somebody like Trump, who, you know, is completely, I mean, like, he doesn't care about laws, he doesn't care about norms, he doesn't care about consultation with experts, he just doesn't care about anything. He has, like, no guiding principle and strategy. And so, other than, like, maybe...
This is a situation where things could escalate out of control very easily, with no one actively wanting it to.
Right.
I mean, it's clear. Trump, well, some people in the administration, most of the Trump administration doesn't want war. Iran doesn't want war. The world doesn't want war. Yeah. This is not something, like, where everyone's like, let's really bring it on. Let's do it. Let's do it. Outside of Fox News, we don't live in that universe.
Anymore.
But that doesn't matter.
This is not after 9/11. Yeah.
But if it just takes a few miscalculations, a few missteps, like, we're on those missteps. We may have gotten lucky and we have a route to dial it back down again, but we can't get lucky every time. If you keep doing this, eventually something's going to go a little bit haywire and you're going to lose that roll of the dice. And now both sides are on a path that they can't back away from, but neither wants to be on.
Last night, I was a little bit worried when I heard about the Boeing 737 that went down right outside of Tehran. I thought maybe that was like a U.S. strike. That was terrifying. I mean, that was terrifying regardless.
I'd call it conviction, but it was more of a hope or a willful. My desire to will it into being kept me fairly confident this was not going to be an escalatory strike. But then I saw the Ukrainian airliner went down, and that's when I was like, oh God, we did not avoid the worst. Yeah. And I guess now, and probably, it seems that it was just an aircraft mechanical failure.
Yeah, which Boeing
don't know
has been
how
having.
I feel about that.
Well, I mean, like, they've had...
But no, not the 737. That's the 737 MAX. This was not that line of aircraft. Like, this is... If it really was a mechanical failure, this is the biggest damn coincidence.
That's true.
Oh, my God.
And the way it went down...
Ukraine.
In a ball.
Why is it always Ukraine?
I know. And it went down, like, in a ball of fire. I mean, there's video footage of it, which seems to suggest, like, maybe it was struck by something. And if all those missiles were going off, you know, from Iran, you never... maybe we'll find out at some point that what really happened there. But
was that real? I saw a video last night of a plane that appeared to be on fire, but I couldn't tell if that was like actually from last night or actually of the Ukrainian craft.
That was being circulated by a lot of different folks as like this is video footage of the Ukrainian plane that went down last night outside of Tehran. Yeah. So
if it is real, that's kind of concerning because it's hard to see how that would be a mechanical failure.
Yeah, that it was a ball of fire before it crashed. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not how mechanical failures operate.
Yeah.
So.
So the other day on Twitter, and you know, I live on Twitter, I saw this one person, this lady who has like a bajillion followers, actually ask her followers to take a poll. She said, listen, I need some new bras. Which ones should I buy? She listed a couple different brands, and guess what? Which one won?
Third Love.
Once I clicked on the Twitter poll, it was like, you know, 75% of people are like, get the Third Love bra. And there's a reason for it. Third Love bras, they make your boobs feel amazing, actually.
And look amazing. Win-win. Look, it's a new year, and if you haven't yet made a resolution, make your resolution for this year to be finally get a bra that fits. And do that at thirdlove.com.
Third Love has over 80 bra sizes. That's 80, which is kind of amazing, including half cups, because, you know, our boobs don't come in perfectly cupped sizes. And so Third Love knows that. They've taken measurements from millions of women to come up with all these sizes. And so you are going to find your size.
Every customer has 60 days to wear it, wash it, and put it to the test. And if you don't love it, return it. And Third Love will wash it and donate it to a woman in need. Third Love's team of expert fit stylists are dedicated to helping you find your perfect fit.
Third Love's hands down the most comfortable bra I've ever owned. It also doesn't have any tags, which I hate tags. They always irritate me. There's no tags on Third Love bras. The straps don't slip. They're lightweight. They're just the best bra I've ever had.
Third Love knows there's a perfect fit for everyone. So right now, they're offering our listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/45th now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/45th for 15% off today.
All right, so I wanted to talk a little bit about something you tweeted over the weekend, and I actually didn't realize this, and then I kind of took a look into it. Trump has a connection to Soleimani in a different way, not to him directly, but to the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps that Soleimani headed up. Apparently, the Trump organization has been involved for a number of years in helping them launder money and acquire weapons. Can you talk a little bit about your tweet and the backstory here?
Gosh, this is all back the Baku Tower in Azerbaijan. This was 2017.
His towers, man. His towers are so dirty.
I know. So Adam Davidson has an article in The New Yorker. You have to go read it right now if you haven't. When he was working on that, I was talking to him about this and helping with research and got really into the guts of the Baku Trump Tower. And, I mean, it is a money laundering operation, as many of his towers likely are. That part is absolutely 1,000% confirmable. The tower was built by having guys with bags of cash drive up and like drop it off to pay for the workers. The tower was never fully completed, in part because when the Trump family got involved, they, despite it being a laundering operation and despite it not being intended to have unnecessary cost overruns, they spent a lot of money on gilding it and blinging it out. And Ivanka spent a lot of money blinging out the spa that was going to have her name. So there was cost increases there. But the real problem was that there was changes in, geopolitical issues separate from the Trumps, which is likely the main reason why it failed. Although I suspect that this campaign's success and the prospect of actually being president may have impacted his ability to continue there. So the whole tower never actually got completed, got very close. Then mysterious fire started and all that. So now it's just sitting there, an empty old husk. Anyway, the money laundering thing, I have no doubts. What also seems very certain is that there are Iranian interests involved, which almost certainly involved the IRGC.
Right.
And we know that there were Iranian military commanders who were involved in the various entities that were directing work and money to the Baku Tower through the Mammadovs, which is the Azerbaijani family, political business family that was in name the owner of the tower. And Trump had to know this. There's no way Trump could have not known what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think when it served Trump's financial interests, he didn't care. But just earlier last April 2019, this administration suddenly did a about face and designated the IRGC a terrorist organization. So, you know, he was doing business indirectly with members of this organization and now designated. And I wondered about that. Why do you think that designation came about, given his history with this organization? Do you think that was also, you know, like a Pompeo type of move?
I doubt that was Trump's idea or direction.
Because it's a State Department that makes these designations.
Yeah, and Pompeo seems to be the one leading the charge here in terms of, like, bellicosity and the Iranian region. But Trump, of course, isn't opposed to, like, he has no particular love or affection for Iran, and he wants to basically dismantle the And his main goal above all is to dismantle Obama's foreign policy. So that's his real guiding star. It's not so much Iran or foreign policy, but destroying Obama's legacy. We have two weeks catch up on the impeachment proceedings. They were a fairly uneventful
holidays, man. Holidays.
Yeah. In terms of how things have usually gone, they were fairly subdued period, thankfully. And I was, largely off Twitter for most of the, past almost 3 weeks now. Not for any, personal self-care reasons, although I probably should do that too, but just because I've been busy getting caught up in some stuff. And, now that I'm back in the swing of things, it's like, I had a moment, I was like, I want to be the kind of person who doesn't care about this anymore. Just not have to worry or think about this. Like, sometimes I just wish it would just all go away.
Oh, yeah.
And I get the appeal of that, of not being concerned or informed about these events, because it feels kind of nice sometimes.
Yeah.
But
Look, I was driving yesterday and I was like, I can't remember. I zoned out thinking of, oh, I know. I was listening to a song that I used to listen to 25 years ago. And I thought, you know what I could do? I could go back to like a very short period of time in my life where I completely ignored all the politics around me. And because I figured when it's all over, I'll still be here. Everything will still be here. I can just ignore it and go back to listening to great music and reading books and watching TV and not giving a crap. But then we had the 45th to do, so.
So, no, well.
There's that. All right, so impeachment. Is it happening? Is it not happening? What's Bolton up to?
It's still going on. We're still kind of in the middle of the pause, but not really. I think things will probably take a turn one way or the other pretty soon. But so the past 2 weeks, I think you can largely sum it up as a lot of back and forth, no real direction one way or another. We did have some updates in the legal proceedings that are ongoing. For instance, the Kupperman suit, in which Kupperman brought suit trying to stop the subpoena to appear before the impeachment inquiry. And that was dismissed. The court found that because the impeachment had already been voted on, it was now moot, and therefore federal courts lacked jurisdiction to decide it, which was arguably the right result, I think. It was no longer an act, although they're still given the ability to reopen the proceedings, and the fact they have not been transmitted, I think, is a little more ambiguous. But yeah,
it's not an unreasonable conclusion.
If they reopen it, then they can try it all over again. But this is kind of the catch 22 in a lawless administration. The courts are too slow to respond to acts, and they cause, and trying to go through the court system itself is a victory for the administration's lawlessness. So, yeah, that's the battleground that House Democrats are dealing with. And, of course, we also have the McGahn and the grand jury suits that are still ongoing. There were arguments heard recently. I don't know what the timeline is there for a decision. This is for Don McGahn, the former White House counsel, and for the grand jury materials before the Mueller investigation, and the Democrats seeking to have those released. And, of course, the DOJ's position was that this is not a place for the judicial branch to get involved. And, in fact, that the courts have no role in intervening in disputes between the legislative branch and the executive branch. So we have at the House during impeachment proceedings, we have the president and House Republicans arguing that the right call here would be for Democrats to go to the courts. It's for the courts to decide. Trump has a right to let the courts sort out these requests. And then once you get to the courts, they're saying, nope, courts can never be involved here. Courts can't look into this. There's no role for the courts to try and decide what's going on. Absolutely, totally incompatible arguments. And yet, that's the world we're in now.
I've gotten much more conscious of what I'm putting in my body and why. And that is why I am sticking with Ritual Vitamins. I've been using them for over a year, and they're just the most transparent company. They tell you everything that's in it, and it's easy to take. 2 pills a day, you're done.
Look, we should all try and eat right, but also it's hard, and sometimes you don't manage to do it. That's why Ritual is the best. It's the only multivitamin I take because it's so convenient, effective, and transparent in its ingredients and its policies.
Yep, they show you all their nutrients, where they came from, why they chose it. They call it traceability. And we love traceability because, you know, we love to hunt down the truth of all matters. And what I love about Ritual also, I'm one of those people who, like, I'm always out on the lookout for kosher vitamins. I don't have to worry about that with Ritual because they're vegan certified, non-GMO, gluten-free, allergen-free ingredients. They kind of work for everybody.
Ritual's delayed-release, no-nausea design capsule is made to be gentle on an empty stomach, too. And the mint essence tab in every bottle makes taking your vitamins a minty fresh experience.
I also love the fact that it comes to my door every 30 days. I don't have to go out and replace them. Look, daily changes can lead to big results, so start small today. Ritual is offering our listeners 10% off your first 3 months. Try it out, satisfaction guaranteed. Go to ritual.com/45th and start your ritual today. That's 10% off your first 3 months at ritual.com/45th.
The other big-ish update is Lev Parnas.
Oh, yes.
He got permission from the court. Yes, he got permission from the court to share with Congress the materials involved in the ongoing criminal case against him and other Giuliani associates.
Materials meaning like what? All like emails, text messages.
His iPhone data seems to be the main one.
Okay.
Which is essentially everything.
Yeah.
Now, as of yesterday, there was an up, or 2 days ago, there's an update that said Parnas's attorney has said his client has received his materials from the government and has, quote, begun the process of sharing them with the House Intelligence Committee. It is very unclear to me what that means. And I also still suspect this is all bullshit and he'll never do anything. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But I think Parnas is playing out a long game that does not involve actually doing anything to assist the House. Unless, of course, he somehow gets immunity, which I don't think he's going to get. But I think if he got immunity, he would totally cooperate. And he's still trying to play for that. But I think
he's trying to play for somebody to save him, basically, right? Either immunity or pardon or something.
A pardon's long gone. That's not happened for him. He's on the Cohen train.
Okay. And then, so can we talk a little bit about Bolton? Bolton made an interesting statement. In the middle of all this Iran stuff, he just pops up with his mustache and is like, by the way, if I'm subpoenaed, I will testify at a House impeachment trial.
Oh, my God. It would be hard to have more contempt for Bolton than I do. Bolton is just the biggest... God.
You know, first of all...
He doesn't have the...
You should not have to even make a statement like that. Everybody should comply with a subpoena. That is the law. You should comply with the subpoena. The fact that you have to go out of your way and say that is that's where we are. That's a sign of where we are with this administration anyways. But
he's Scaramucci with Prozac and a mustache. he just likes attention. He likes
selling a book
in the middle of stuff. Yeah, he's certainly, I'd say, smarter than Scaramucci. But his actual goals are just to be important, have attention, and to unleash war everywhere. He's kind of the soulmate of Lindsey Graham in that respect. But Lindsey Graham's been better at his mission than
Lindsey Graham's than Bolton disgusting. Has. A number of people are saying, the House should say, okay, well, we're going to reopen these proceedings and we're going to go ahead and subpoena you to see if he will comply with the House subpoena. Although he has only very specifically said it would be a Senate subpoena he'd comply with. But
sure, why not? That might be an option. But the other problem with that is that Bolton's full of shit and he's not going to testify in front of the House. He probably won't even testify in front of the Senate. He probably knows they're never going to subpoena him. So he wants to come out of this being the good guy by saying oh, look, I would have testified all along, but I never had to because I never got subpoenaed. So, did my best. What else could I have done? So bad. Too bad. So sad. Sorry.
Well, right
That's
after
what his real goal is here.
Like a day after Bolton made this announcement, Mitch McConnell said that he had enough votes in the Senate to move forward an impeachment trial without calling witnesses or hearing new evidence. And that's something that obviously Democrats don't want at all. They want a trial with witnesses and evidence. And I think that's kind of why Nancy Pelosi has been stalling on sending the impeachment articles over. She's lay down the rules. The rules have to be fair. And then we're going to send you the articles. But McConnell sounds like he's no, we're going to have a trial without any trial, basically.
So Democrats don't have much leverage here.
Yeah.
But that is part of why, a big reason why, Nancy Pelosi has not yet transmitted the articles. But the other reason is the other thing on Democrat side is delay. Because every day that passes by, there's
worse and worse.
Time for more information to come out. Time for more evidence to come out. And at a certain point, theoretically, it would be impossible for McConnell to carry out his goal of just dismissing this all, sweeping under the rug, and calling it a day. I think that would take a lot of more information before that point was reached. But the longer this goes on, the more the Republicans in the Senate that could possibly be squishy and converted away from McConnell's plan, the more they have to grapple with the fact that they may dismiss Trump and then the next day have it all break wide open that Trump's like, yeah, I did it. Of course I did it. I love doing it. It was the best thing. I'm so glad I just totally withheld that military aid so that I could get my way with Zelensky and also get a new tower in Ukraine probably.
Well, in these couple of weeks that we've been off air, actually there was a story, and it feels like a million years ago, a story that came out that said that, and this is precisely probably what the Democrats are, like you said, waiting for more information. There was reporting that said that for months, DOD officials were begging Trump to release the aid, right? Did that happen, right? I wasn't dreaming that.
Yeah, so we had, I think, probably 2 weeks ago now, we had a release of emails obtained by FOIA from OMB showing what they did during this whole delay process. And of course, basically all of it was redacted. Sometimes it'd be hello or good morning, and then three paragraphs of redaction. So the contents were totally obscured. then Just Security put out an article last week, I think, by Kate Brennan. Definitely check it out, where they had gotten to view these emails in their entirety. And in short, what the emails show is that there was, you know, quote, clear direction by from POTUS to continue the hold on the Ukraine aid, and that there was no justification for it. Everyone's concerned about the legality, that everyone was confused and wanting this to go away. And there was no direction about why this was being done or how to make it stop, other than that Trump wanted it and everyone else should just buzz off and not do it until he gave the say-so. So that we had those documents. Again, Duffy is one of the guys that absolutely needs to testify, and it's absurd and a constitutional crisis in itself that he is probably not ever going to. Because, again, the matters we're talking about here, the matters involved in the impeachment trial, they're not some whodunit. They're not some, like, well, where was the answer? Who knows? Right. Or, like, where are the secret documents that explain all? No.
They're all
there. We know exactly, like, if you wanted to get a firm, solid, unambiguous answer, we could do it because we knew who to ask. We know who was involved. We know who could tell us. We know where they are. We know how to find them. Like, there is no mystery. The question is getting them to talk. They have all the answers. Duffy, Bolton, I mean, those are probably, well, Pompeo and Giuliani would be my four on my list of who needs to talk.
Oh, Giuliani. Now. Yeah, I was going to ask you. What's he up to?
Still just tweeting away and probably butt-dialing reporters. So we have that, and then we also have other issues. Like, for instance, we know that New York Times is currently suing for 20 emails, is the reporting, between Robert Blair, who was a top aide to Chief of Staff Mulvaney, and Mike Duffy, who is an official with OMB, which apparently are so sensitive that they're not being released, not even in redacted form. They're just full out not even releasing these emails. And New York Times is
still a lot of emails. And 20, yeah.
Yeah, and that's between the people who would be, you know, if you're going to have emails between people in the administration duking it out over what's going on with this, the aid, right, that's likely where it'd be found. So
God,
that's being
I just
sought.
Hope those emails say, no, we are not going to release the, we're not going to give you the green light to release the money until...
They won't say that. That's the thing. Trump has very few skills in his, like, legit skills, but one of his skills is avoiding getting things in writing.
Right.
He acts like a mob boss. He's maintained
maybe
a
the aide didn't know.
Era approach.
Maybe the aide was stupid.
That's true, but yeah. Then the aide is screwed.
Yeah, that's true.
That's not a Trump. Like, yeah. So, I mean, it obviously the aide wouldn't be doing this for his own interest, but...
Yeah.
I mean, maybe the email says, like, no, Trump is waiting for that tower in
the
Ukraine
president
to
told
come.
Me to tell you.
until right. His Yalta Tower finally gets built, which he's been trying, or about 10 years ago he was trying to build, he's not releasing the aid. So anyway, we also got American Oversight, who has two FOIA requests that we expect this week. This should maybe interesting. The first
and that's
is today.
An organization, right? And, that's like a watchdog organization?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we're hoping today to get State Department documents on Rudy Giuliani, although they're probably going to be redacted. But that, again, if they actually produce those documents, we know that there was frequent contact, or at least regular contact between State Department officials and Giuliani, and both over the, well, we know for sure over the Ukrainian ambassador issue, but what I would love to see is some communications over the LNG issue, hopefully. We also have Kurt Volker documents, like calendars, notes, additional emails, which should be released on Friday. But again, probably redacted, which will mean more lawsuits to get those cleared.
Right.
And then we have all these other requests out there from other organizations, other media agencies that we're still waiting. But this is the problem with FOIA. And this is beyond this administration. But like FOIA is broken, needs to be fixed. I mean... There's ways to get responses faster, which we have and we've seen in a few cases here. But like, for instance, if you listen to Undisclosed, we did a case called Gary Mitchum Reeves a few years back. As part of that, I filed some requests with DOJ for information relating to mostly Lana Ensley and some of the bank robberies she was involved in and the heist she pulled off. Guess what I got yesterday in the mail? A response.
2 years later.
Like two and a half years later. Yes. And I mean, that's kind of how it goes.
Yeah. That's a similar experience when I do stuff like that for immigration. it'll be a year and a half later and they'll say, we have nothing to give you. Be more specific. I mean, whatever. I mean, like, it's really frustrating. Yeah. And then otherwise you just gotta, litigate it. And that's costly.
And more importantly, it's time consuming in the case of the impeachment issues. But that is another reason why the delay is happening, because the more pressure that's on Senate Republicans, the more likely that there'll actually be a real trial. And by real trial, I mean just actually have witnesses called to any degree.
Right. Well, Pelosi apparently yesterday, I thought that maybe part of her strategy was to just keep this hanging over his head like the entire year, you know, up until the election. But she did say yesterday.
That won't work.
It wouldn't work. But she said yesterday that she would be soon transmitting the articles over to the Senate. So I don't know what soon means. Now, the State of the Union is coming up not too long from now, right? And I'm wondering if that has anything to do with this or exactly what she's waiting for.
I think there is only so long she could ever have delayed sending the articles.
Yeah, February 4th it'll be the State of the Union, yeah.
I think that we'll probably see action there one way or another. Although maybe it's because of Lev Parnas. Maybe that's what they're waiting for. Here's the magical key that he's passing over in his iPhone now.
Yeah.
We'll see.
On other domestic fronts, any other stories that you want to? I did see. Did you see the? I just thought I have to mention this before we get off. Donald Trump Jr.'s photographs that he Instagrammed the other day, holding a.
I try and avoid everything to do with Don Jr.
That man. Well, you know what? There's been a poll that shows about 24% of Republicans support him being 24% a nominee in 2024. For the presidency. Yep. Now, he himself shared a photograph of him holding an AR-15 automatic rifle that had not just a white knight insignia, which is a racist insignia.
What?
Oh, yeah, but also, no, that's not it.
Oh, I didn't even hear about this.
Oh, the photograph is shocking, but also the gun has an image of Hillary Clinton behind bars also printed on it. Oh. And then above it is a white knight's insignia. It's crazy.
I honestly think Trump had the plans, like his grand plan in 2016 after the election was to, well, one, you know, get reelected, two, you know, find a way to stay president forever anyway, and then three, have Ivanka be his successor.
Oh, yeah.
I think he realized she was the logical choice and the only competent choice as successor.
I think Don Jr. might be challenging that, yeah.
But then I think as time went on, it became clear that Ivanka didn't have the mass demagogue appeal that was needed to be Trump's successor, and that even though Ivanka is likely more intelligent, certainly more poised, certainly able to fake it better, Don Jr. has the part of Trump that Trump supporters really like.
There
which
you
is
go.
The there own the go. Libs,
the naked,
audacity.
The naked racism, and you know, propensity for violence and cowardly. What you know, like him and Eric, you know, tweeting about going to war and cutting off animal tails, but they of course won't list themselves. No, you're right. I think Ivanka doesn't have the same kind of ugly chops. I mean, I think she's a deeply problematic person, but she doesn't have like the.
Yes. She's not enough of a problem for Trump supporters.
She's just not viscerally. You know what I mean? Like she just doesn't hit him where. But Don Jr. Definitely does, and I do think that they would like to see a Trump. I mean, I think that for Trump, that would be like the greatest achievement is to have a dynasty of presidents, right? To have this to be his legacy, that he's just the first of
to
many
be
Trumps.
A Central Asian dictatorship.
Yeah.
Yes, that is his ultimate goal.
And you know,
in life.
If the GOP cares at all about its party, it should be very concerned about this because what that means is that this family is poised to derail the GOP forever and for good and like really completely destroy it and to destroy it.
Do they have a choice? GOP has no other options here.
No, their option should be that they should absolutely, they have to start marginalizing this part of the base and saying, you know what, we're not. We have to come
their
back to the center.
Their base is too small.
We have to come back.
That would be ultimately a long-term solution, but that's not realistic for them right now because the primaries.
They've ceded basically complete power to the Trumps because no other GOP candidate ever will have a chance then.
That is a true statement. That is a true statement.
All right.
You've accurately described the situation we're in now.
Okay. All right. So anything else before we want to wrap up our very first episode of the year?
I think that's it for now. All Yay, right. 2020.
Yay, 2020.
Let's at least, let's like dial back the awfulness and like keep the streak going of no actual warfare.
No actual warfare. Yeah. No war against
Iran. Actual openly declared warfare. Let's just all chill out a bit. Just a little bit.
Trump seemed pretty chilled this morning to me. But anyway. All right. Okay. Thanks so much.
I just keep thinking. I swear I do think we've averted crisis for now.
I do think so too. But
that is only by chance. Like we came, I think an alternate universe, it just spun off last night. Yeah. And the one where a few American casualties were incurred is, God knows what happens in that universe. Sucks to be them.
And the truth is this, the scary thing about any of these situations is that you always have independent actors too. You have people who the government has no control of, both whether it's Iran or it's America, that can take retaliatory action and then spark off actual official conflict. And so I think that's scarier to me, especially in Iraq where you have so many different players and there's no centralized kind of control over all the different militias and, you know, militant actors. So I think that's the scary part. I do think that there's a chance that, the State Department, DOD, they all issued immediately. They're like, every American, get out of Iraq immediately. Get out of the whole region. I think there's always going to be danger against American lives going, in the wake of the last week's events. So, all right. On that happy note, we'll be back in 7 days. Thanks, you guys, for tuning in. Talk to you then.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meetal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.